Hello.
G'day.
Oh my God, it sounds normal again because Ellen is back in Brisbane.
Thank you so much for slogging through that phone episode. It will never be that shit again.
It will never,
We learned who our diehard fans were that episode. Thanks, guys.
And like, Ellen doesn't listen to the podcast. I actually do listen to our podcast when we release it.
Did you say that so judgmentally?
I couldn't get through it. No, but you just don't.
No, I don't.
I enjoy listening to it. I know that sounds really full of myself, but also because like Ellen's been away and I've missed her. So I've been listening to the podcast being like,
while you fall asleep.
I miss Ellen. But yay, Ellen's up visiting for a few days. So we have commandeered her to record quite a bit of Mitlu.
Getting some hashtag content out for you guys.
Hashtag content. I don't think we have any housekeeping today other than to tell you to get in onto our Patreon because we do have some Patreon content. The Teacher's Pet episode that Ellen took charge of. I am in midst of research to go up for next month's episode. So you should do that. Make sure that you're telling your friends and your family and your pets and your coworkers and your enemies about the podcast and getting them to subscribe and listen because we're having a good time. And we're going to sort out the technical difficulties. Ellen's going to have a microphone.
Everything's going to sound good again, I promise.
Yeah. That was really interesting because like as Ellen and I discovered, we get a lot of cues on like when to talk.
Yeah.
By looking at each other.
And boy, do we love to talk. So we're constantly like cutting each other off.
Yeah. And I was like, sorry, what was that, doll? Take that back. Take that
back,
Chris.
What's going on here?
What's this? Huh?
It's fine. But no more shit. Only great stuff from now on.
Oh, also the other bit of housekeeping, not that we don't already have like a huge workload. Ellen and I were talking today because both of us read a lot of true crime books. Related to the podcast and otherwise, but we were wondering if people would be interested in joining us on like a Mitlu, like maybe like a monthly book club or like a bi-monthly book club or something like that.
So we can kind of, cause we read so many books, we talk about it. We could probably make episodes about it and get everybody involved. It's a way for us all to like talk about things and all come together.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in something like that, let us know.
Because I, currently I'm reading The Love Is Always Mum, which is about Mae West, whose mum and dad were Fred and Rosemary West. Really bad serial killers in the UK. And then I also, thanks to my good pal Eleanor at Dimmicks, who's also a customer at my work, she's such a sweetie pie and she's actually become a pal, which is so cute. I ordered Kerry Rawson's new book, well, her first book. She is Dennis Rader's daughter, BTK. So this is her book in like the midst of the tragedy of finding out that her father was a serial killer. So if you want to read along with us and have discussions with us,
let us know.
Let us know and do that. All right. So
who have we got today, Jess?
So I was looking at Victorian murders and I remembered this image of a guy. I didn't know who his name was. I didn't know any context of like what this guy had done. But I remembered his face because I thought he looked like Stephen Hawking. And I thought the news was trying to tell me that Stephen Hawking had murdered somebody.
Right.
But then I was like, oh, the guy's not in the wheelchair. So it mustn't be.
Holy shit, Jess.
But he does.
This is our problematic episode.
There's an image of this man who I'm going to be talking about tonight. When he was exiting the courthouse, he had like the button-up shirt and the blazer and the glasses, same sort of color hair as Stephen Hawking. So that's like what I put this guy up as. So I'm going to be talking tonight about Peter Norris Dupas.
Stephen Hawking.
Not Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking, not a murderer.
Stephen Hawking, an international treasure. Peter Dupas, one of the worst people ever. All right. So this whole thing and like basically the big blow up of Peter Dupas came when a young woman called Nikki Patterson, who was a trained psychotherapist that was living in Northcote in Melbourne, was murdered. So Nikki at the time of her murder was described as, you know, a bit of a rascal. She was in a really like perfect point in her life. She'd done all of this study and all of this work and had set up a practice at home. She was discovering who she was and she was keen to like have a career that meant that she was helping other people. So before her death, she had joined the Ardoch Youth Foundation, which she worked, which worked to provide underprivileged children with education. But she was setting up her own psychotherapist work at home, and she'd placed an advertisement in the local paper. So basically a friend had gone to Nikki's place to like meet up and have coffee and catch up. And she turned up at the place and found Nikki dead. And it was presumed just from the placing of the body and everything. Well, you know, she was dead, but that Nikki had committed suicide. But upon officers arriving, they were like, this is a homicide. So door knocks were done around the area, and it showed that at about 10 o'clock in the morning, there had been like an argument overheard by some neighbors, and that there was a screaming, but to people, it just sounded like a normal domestic dispute. So people didn't intervene. So that solidified the timeline. So the murder scene, not to be too graphic, but she had been stabbed multiple times. She was semi-naked and she had been mutilated. And there was a sense of some sort of formal meeting. So there was a tray on the coffee table with like a plunger and two coffee cups. So it was a sense
they could tell that somebody else is there.
So, and also the front of her house was set up as almost like a consulting room. So yeah, she was carrying out her business at home. There was a diary entry in her calendar that said she was meeting with a man named Malcolm, and there was a phone number. And, you know, police were wondering where this connection, like what connection this person would have had to Nikki. And the mobile number actually belonged to a poor innocent student.
Oh no.
Which was like almost like a burner cell sort of thing, but yep. The man was alibied out. So inquiries were then made into numbers that had rung Nikki's house, and there were numerous calls made from a person called Peter Norris Dupas. So Peter Dupas was the youngest of three children born into what was described as a fairly normal family. He's born in Sydney, yuck, New South Wales. But his family had moved to Melbourne when he was still a toddler. Toddler, not toddler. Oh my God. they're both laughing. Zane and Ellen are both laughing at me.
Oh, sorry, everybody from Sydney.
Yeah. Yeah. We won't get into that again. With both siblings considerably older, his elderly parents treated him much like an only child. Dupas left school upon completing form five. So I assume that's what, year 10, 11? He later on got his high school certificate, which is like the QCS FAS, I guess.
HSC,
yeah. So October 3rd, 1968, the age of 15, Peter Dupas, who was still attending high school at Waverley High School in Eastern Melbourne, visited his next door neighbor requesting to borrow a knife for the purpose of peeling vegetables. Dupas was apprehended after he had stabbed the woman in her face, neck and hand as she attempted to fight off the attack. He later told police that he could not help himself and did not know why he began to attack the woman. He was placed on 18 months probation and was admitted to the Larindel Psychiatric Hospital for evaluation. He was released after 2 weeks and it was treated as an outpatient. October 1969, a mortuary that was located in the Austin Hospital was broken into. Two bodies of two elderly women were mutilated using a pathologist's knife. One body contained a strange wound inflicted with a knife to the area of the thigh. Police actually believe now that Peter was involved in these break-ins, and the wounds inflicted that were inflicted on one of the bodies were matched to wounds that were found on Nikki Patterson. He was said to be like potentially dangerous. And the main thing about Peter Norris Dupas, which you'll find across like everything I'm going to talk about tonight, he's just in complete denial about everything, which is even like more dangerous and really difficult for treatment as well.
You can't acknowledge that you've done something.
When you can't acknowledge and there's no remorse and everything like that. So back to Nikki. So Peter Dupas was questioned and upon meeting him, police noticed a scratch on his face.
Nothing sus.
Nothing sus. Remember Jerry Baden Clay? Nothing sus, guys. Just a shaving cut.
Just like a 3-inch long shaving cut?
Nope. And obviously that could be linked to an altercation. Upon arriving at Dupas's house, the garden hose actually looks like it had been repaired with yellow electrical tape, which was linked to the scene of the crime of Nikki Patterson, with Nikki's body being found, parts of her body being covered in yellow electrical tape. At the bottom of Peter Dupas's bin was torn up pieces of paper, and police like put it back together, and it contained the address of Nikki Patterson and the appointment time with the name Malcolm, which was the name that was found in Nikki Patterson's diary.
He really didn't think that they would ever find him.
No, I know.
Did he?
He's really dumb.
He really didn't try to hide anything.
Very, very dumb. Also down the bottom of the bin was a pair of shoes that were covered in blood and what is known as a kit. So people like Ted Bundy had a kit. So Ted Bundy's kit contained like a ski mask, handcuffs, rope.
Tights,
condoms, the whole lot. Actually, I don't know if Ted Bundy carried condoms, but I didn't ask. So in Peter Dupas's kit were gloves, a balaclava and condoms. So there was also a jacket which appeared to have blood on it and also a piece of newspaper which had a photo of Nikki Patterson that was the when the paper had announced that she had been murdered.
This guy's a fucking moron.
Yeah. So obviously he was arrested and charged. He had a really loose alibi and the evidence against him was overwhelming. There was a DNA on the jacket that linked Peter Dupas to Nikki Patterson. There was CCTV footage near Nikki Patterson's home, which captured him filling his car up with petrol, and he was wearing that jacket that they had seized. So the evidence was compelling and he was sentenced to life in prison without parole. So you'd think, hooray, this guy.
Close the book.
It's done.
Bake him away, toys.
You get me every time with that line.
It's just so incredibly funny.
So funny. Okay. So sentenced to life in prison without parole. But this was just the beginning into the insight of this sexual predator and sadistic predator. It was obvious to police because of the, I don't know if this is the right word, but like the intensity of the murder, how thought out and planned it was that this was not
his first time.
This wasn't his first. So obviously, like I said, he had a substantial file on him dating back to the early 70s. So further on from the neighbor that he attacked and the mortuary incident, but that hasn't been proved, I should say, but it was linked because of the marks.
The similarities. Yeah.
So the 5th of November, 1973 in Mitcham, Melbourne, a woman had been raped. A man had come to the door saying that his car had broken down and he wanted to use a screwdriver. He followed her into the house and he attacked her. A few days later, the attacker tried to strike again. This time the woman was a bit wary and she said that her husband was on his way home and he would be able to fix the car. He said, don't worry, put the hood down of the car, and then drove away. And the woman got the car number. See, this is what I mean. Like, this guy is an idiot.
Mm.
Like, he's obviously got some compulsion in his head. Mm-hmm. Not saying that that's an excuse, but like he obviously has a compulsion in his head and he's just like, kill, kill, kill. And he's just not he's not thinking this through. Like
yeah.
there's no rhyme or reason or thought in his head, if I'm honest. So a pattern was emerging and a description of the attacker. And so police were narrowing down on a suspect and they came to 21-year-old at this point, Peter Dupas.
21?
21. So Peter Dupas flat out denied any involvement at this time, but his victim had picked him out in the lineup, which is, you know, a turning point. He was convicted and sentenced to 9 years imprisonment. He was cold. He was calculated. He went to prison. So basically he was in prison 25 years before Nikki Patterson was murdered, which is mental. So Peter Dupas received a 5-year minimum prison sentence for 3 charges of assault with intent to rape and malicious wounding. A 1980 report stated that there is little that can be said in Dupas's favor. He remains an extremely disturbed, immature and dangerous man. His release on parole was a mistake. After 1 month after his release in 1985, Dupas was again released from prison in February. Approximately 1 month later, he had raped a 21-year-old woman on a beach in Blairgowrie. That's a really hard word to say. After alighting from his car, Dupas followed the woman and attacked her, holding her to the ground at knife point before raping her. He later told the police, "I'm sorry for what happened."
Doubtful.
So basically upon his release on that, people were telling him apparently that he was okay and that he was going to, it wasn't going to, and then he never thought it was going to happen again and that he just wanted to live a normal life. Jump forward to 1994. On August 18th, 1994, after entering a guilty plea to one count of false imprisonment in the County Court of Bendigo, Dupas was sentenced to 3 years and 9 months imprisonment with a minimum period of 2 years and 9 months. So now we're up to 96, and he had been released from prison and moved into a house in Melbourne in the suburb of Pasco Vale. So he was a repeat offender who showed no remorse and couldn't help himself, and he did shit, went to jail, did more shit, went to jail, you know. So police, obviously they had this guy. Now we're up to, he's been sentenced to life imprisonment without parole for the murder of Nikki Patterson. So police are obviously like, this guy's
got an issue.
He's got an issue. And so obviously there's, you know, you'd be like, okay, let's go through some old cases and see if we can
connect them to him.
So a task force was formed and they started with the 1997 murder of Margaret Marr. So Margaret lived in Campbellfield and she was known locally for her work as a sex worker. She was considered harmless. She was well-liked and softly spoken. She was 40 years old and she came from a quite successful and respected family. Margaret's body was found at Somerton around 6:30 in the morning by a man and a woman who were collecting cans for a charity. And I've said, question mark, okay. So weird. Those people that collect cans. It's just really weird.
Is it?
I find it really weird.
Jess hates charity.
No, I like charity. It's just I find picking up cans for charity a little odd.
Like cans of food to be donated
cans? Empty cans.
You can like trade them in for money.
Yeah. All right. You don't know where they've been.
We're back on board.
You don't know where they've been though.
I don't think like the people who are like dying and like getting the money from the charity really care.
No, that's fair enough. Anyway. So they saw this like big pile of computer parts and boxes and all this shit. And they lifted one of the boxes up and they found the body of Margaret Marr.
Oh, bad.
I know. So Margaret had been choked to death, mutilated. And oh God, I touch my boobs as I say this because this is obvious. Like this is honestly one of like the most horrific things I've ever read. He had removed one of her breasts and basically because unfortunately Margaret was seen as something as what we call a high risk victim, the investigation went cold.
They just didn't care about her because the police don't care about sex workers.
They did do an investigation into Margaret a lot more than, you know, a lot of other stories you hear about sex workers being murdered, but there just wasn't a lot of information. DNA obviously in 97 wasn't too much of a thing. So the case just went cold.
Right.
But you know, once again, just saying like, I'm not putting shit on the police, but you know, obviously she had, some may consider a less than savory lifestyle. So, you know, maybe that was the reason why investigation wasn't taken seriously, more seriously than others. So more than 7 years had passed since Margaret's murder, and it was being linked to Nikki Patterson, both being homicides within the 7 years. And because obviously like mutilation of a body. So Nikki Patterson's breast had also been removed.
Right.
So that is, that's quite a link, especially.
Pretty obvious like calling card.
Yeah. But the police obviously needed more evidence. The boxes of the computer parts were re-examined and there was a glove. So some DNA was able to be lifted from, it was like a ski glove almost or something. Not like a, latex glove. So some DNA was lifted from the glove and it matched their leading suspect of Peter Dupas. And the chance of it belonging to anybody else was like 1 in 450,000. So Senior Corwin, no, oh my God. I can't, like, you know, when you're like taking notes, like you're getting so much information in and you just can't, like what you write just doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, you it's know, not what like you're
technically
saying.
English.
Yeah.
It's like a secret code only for you.
Exactly.
Yes, I do know exactly
Senior
that.
Senior Crown Prosecutor Michelle Williams stated that the argument was that the person who killed Margaret was exactly the same person who killed Nikki Patterson because of the signature of removing the breasts. It was like an unusual feature and it was an underlying methodology. But Dupas mounted a defense saying that breast and genital mutilation was common practice in the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah.
And was shown in the case of Jack the Ripper. It's like,
If you're calling on Jack the Ripper for your like precedent, I think you're in a bit of trouble.
Yeah. So the defense basically just argued that it wasn't an unusual set of circumstances. So the trial lasted for 3 weeks and at the end of it, Peter Dupas was charged with life without parole.
Yay.
Which he already had for the murder of Nikki Patterson. So Dupas at this point is now known as one of Australia's most sadistic killers, removing, you know, obviously murder's awful, but to me, like, mutilation, genital mutilation, like the whole, yeah, like that.
It's
whole
a huge
enchilada.
Aggravating factor.
Yeah. It really irks me.
We're coming out against mutilation.
Yeah.
You heard it here, folks.
You heard it here,
mutilation
folks.
Is bad.
Removing one of Nikki's breasts and taking it with him. That was never recovered, by the way. And removing one of Margaret Marr's breasts and forcing it into her mouth. Like how, like that's fucked. So now we're jumping back again to the 1st of November 1997, which was All Saints Day at Faulkner Cemetery in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. Messina Halvargas, she was 25. She was a bank worker who had taken her boyfriend's car to go and tend her grandmother's grave. Messina was known as a lovely young girl who lived a modest life with her parents. In the afternoon, Messina decided to visit her grandmother who was buried in the Greek Orthodox section of the cemetery. She was very slight in build. She was a beautiful girl. She knelt down to tend the graves and she was attacked viciously, murdered and dragged to an area between two graves and basically left for dead. She was reported missing by her father and her boyfriend, and Messina's trail, you know, her last movements led to the cemetery where they found the boyfriend's car and then they found the murder scene. Messina had suffered more than 80 stab wounds throughout her body. With such a violent and random attack, obviously there was a lot of media interest. People really freaked out. Mm. And there, in the days leading up to the murder, women had been approached at the cemetery by this guy. So obviously he was stalking people at the cemetery trying to, you know, find a victim. Mm. A lady had come forward with a description of the man who was seen in the area. And fuck me, does it look like Peter Dupas? Like the sketch is...
They got it right.
I actually said that in my notes. I was like,
sometimes sketches like don't even look human. And then sometimes they look like so like the person that it's hard to believe that they weren't just looking at their face.
Honestly, I will link this sketch that they put in this documentary that I watched about this case. Fucking hell. Like either that woman is like a robot. Like I think about this all the time. Like if I had to describe somebody seen in a, like a glance, even people that I know.
I couldn't describe you to a sketch artist and have
honestly,
it look like somebody.
I was
somebody.
Just about to say that, but I was afraid you were going to be like, Jess, we've been best friends for 12 years. Like, no. I feel like you should.
I'd be like, she wears glasses. I don't know. She looks like Jess.
Like here's a photo.
Yeah. Copy this.
So the lady had mentioned, talking to the man on the day of the murder. So the months following Messina's murder, police would take over 1,000 statements and basically to no avail. 7 years after Messina's death, police had just closed the case of Margaret Marr. So they were looking at other lines of inquiry in Messina's murder. So we're up to like February 2005. The Victorian government released a $1 million reward for any information leading to the capture of Messina's killer. So the original award actually was only $50,000, but George Halvargas, Messina's father, being a boss ass man that he was, fought for his daughter and got it bumped up. Oh, notes. Come on. Notes. Where are ya? Fought for his daughter to get up to $100,000. And then finally it was pushed up to 1 million.
Good.
So with the reward money being bumped up, obviously witnesses come forward. And this was including Andrew Fraser. So Andrew Fraser, the police that are in this documentary that I watched were like, this guy was like the underworld's lawyer of choice. So like, if you were a bad un and you needed some shit taken care of, you went to Andrew Fraser. And he was a disgraced lawyer at the time who was actually doing prison time for drug trafficking.
Oh, yeah.
And he had actually done time in prison with Peter Dupas. Andrew had made contact with Peter in prison basically because of how renowned Peter was as like a violent killer. He wanted Peter on side in case anything had happened in prison.
He needed somebody to like kill somebody for him?
Yeah.
Right.
So Andrew Fraser alleged that Peter Dupas was accosted by another inmate in prison who said, "You killed my cousin Messina." And Peter turned to Fraser saying, "How does he know that? How does that guy know what I've done?"
Oh my God.
Fraser had like hidden a knife on the grounds of the prison. He had buried it and he dug it up and he showed the knife to Peter Dupas, and Dupas had balanced the knife in his hand and muttered the words Messina.
What the hell?
I know, really weird, right?
What?
So Fraser was discussing Peter Dupas's glove that was left behind at the scene of Margaret Marr's murder. And he brought up the scene of Messina Halvargas, and Peter Dupas remarked that he left no DNA at that scene. So Fraser and Dupas had spent a really considerable amount of time in prison together. One time they were watching television and George Halvargas, Messina's father, appeared on screen appealing for information for his daughter, for his daughter's murder. And Peter Dupas clamped both of his hands over his mouth and began rocking backward and forward. Fraser asked him what was wrong, and Dupas mimed the murder of Messina.
What in the a way, fuck?
In a way that only police would have known, because it was never released to the public that Messina was kneeling down when she was initially struck from behind. So there was no way.
If he didn't kill her.
Yeah.
And if all the other things before didn't demonstrate that he did kill her.
Yeah. So Andrew Fraser agreed to give information in court on the proviso that he was going to be released from prison. Mm-hmm. So a condition of mercy was presented to the government to have Andrew Fraser released from prison so he could give the evidence in court. But this process took over a year. And basically, as soon as he was released, he was in court within a few hours.
Right.
So the 12th of July, 2007, most highly anticipated trial in Australian criminal history. Police tried to corroborate what, like most of what Andrew Fraser was stating about what had happened in prison by prison records and inmate movements within the prison. Mrs. Berman, who was the lady who did the sketch, who supplied the sketch from the cemetery, she took the stand as well. Dupas's jacket, actually, that had been connected to the murder of Nikki Patterson, matched a description Mrs. Berman had made of the man in the cemetery on the day of Messina's murder. Mm. So he wore it on both murders.
It's his murder jacket.
Murder jacket. Jesus. So after a 22-day trial, he was convicted for life with no minimum sentence. But of course, he appealed. He appealed the conviction on the grounds of the reliability of the witnesses who had come forward, and the defense argued that there was no way he was going to have a fair trial on the murder of Messina because of the bias in the media because of his previous convictions. But it's also like, dude, you're already on life without parole. Like,
yeah, you're never getting out.
Mm. Like, you know, just take it like a man. You fucking did it. So the appeal was actually upheld, and the guilty verdict for the murder of Messina was quashed. So a retrial was ordered. The members of the Halvargas family had to witness and endure the legal process like once again.
That's horseshit.
Stupid. So 25th of October 2010, senior prosecutor Michelle Williams, who was not present at the original trial for Messina Halvargas, was on. And the second prosecution relied basically on the same evidence and witnesses from before. Witnesses once again took to the stand, including Andrew Fraser, who, just so you know, he did get some of the reward money. He didn't get all of it, but he did get some. This trial lasted 26 days and he was found guilty. He appealed again and that appeal was denied.
Thank God.
So as I said, Andrew Fraser received some of the $1 million reward, but without his statement, there wouldn't have been a trial for the murder of Messina Halvargas, and her family wouldn't have been, you know, they wouldn't have had the closure of, you know, knowing what happened and stuff like that.
Right.
So after a four-decade-long reign of terror, a cost of thousands of police hours, and not to mention the pain that he caused to the families of Nikki, Margaret, and Messina, many psychiatric evaluations were done on GPAS, but finding no psychiatric reason or childhood trauma otherwise to his crimes, but just a deep-seated hatred of women. The police believe that he could be suspect in other homicides, including the murders of Helen McMahon, Kathleen Downs, and Renita Brutton, and that he was just driven by things that he couldn't understand. And yeah, so I believe the task force is still looking into those murders, but obviously with the timeline, with it being quite far.
Going all the way back basically to the 1970s, like it's hard to, I mean, witnesses would be dead by now. DNA evidence would basically be non-existent.
But yeah.
I have so many conflicting feelings about that case. One, I can't believe he was ever released on parole for anything.
But like, because I mean, this is like the discussion we had during the Jill Maher. So obviously this problem with parole had been happening for a really, really, really long time.
It's still happening.
But yeah, that is Peter Norris Dupas.
That was awful.
I know.
Great episode. Awful content.
Once again, feels like I've been talking for only like 3 seconds, but
felt like a lifetime.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. Here's a question that I have for you, which I know you can't answer. How can somebody who mutilates women not have something psychiatrically wrong with them? Isn't like by definition, if you're like, you know what I think is fine, mutilating people, there is something psychiatrically wrong with you.
I think just in the psychiatric evaluations, I think they're going by like childhood trauma or like, you know how like a lot of the time with a lot of murderers in general, like there's like I know they talk about like head trauma and stuff like that when people are children.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously like there is something, like this guy has no remorse and also he never flat out
admitted to doing any of it.
I mean, obviously different in like an inmate situation. He might've felt like he was showing off or something like that, but there's definitely like no remorse. And I feel like that sort of anger towards women in that sort of way there is definitely something psychiatric, but there's probably nothing diagnostically, you know,
they just go, this guy's nuts.
Yeah.
Stamp, move on.
So he's in prison forever.
Good.
Yeah. I didn't really know much about him.
No, I didn't know much about him either. Yeah.
It'll
haunt my nightmares for sure.
Yeah. And his creepy little face, his eyes are dead. It's a terrifying looking man. Like not that.
No offense, Stephen Hawking.
No. Like there's one shot that he looks like Stephen Hawking. That's the only thing I'm going from. But like his other photos where he looks like a murderer. I hate to say somebody looks like a murderer, but that guy looks like
a murderer. If you can look like a murderer, Peter Dupas looks like a murderer.
Yeah.
Stunning. I'm traumatized.
Yeah.
And I'll never feel safe walking home ever again. Not that I ever did to begin with.
No.
Because we spend all of our free time reading about men murdering women. Great episode. What are all the names of our social media?
Sweet. Once again, I'm so sorry.
No, it was great.
I just always feel so guilty. Like I feel like Ellen just like, she's like, she's got so much to chat about and I feel like I'm the unprofessional host.
Well, I mean, I'm a genius, so.
Yeah, that's true.
What can you do? I'm just so incredibly clever.
So happy you're here.
Thank you.
Ellen will be coming up and visiting because I've commandeered her to come and see a performance I'm doing, hopefully, if I get in. And she's going to come up for my mum's wedding.
Very excited.
We're gonna have such a fucking stunning time.
Queen. So stunning.
So, and I'm going to be going down to Hobart as well.
I know. Very exciting. If we have any listeners in Hobart, hit me up.
Oh my God. Yes. Yes. So Ellen can make some friends.
Please. I'm so lonely.
But she's so much happier down there. Just so everybody knows, she's got the sparkle back.
Oh, thanks, girl.
She got the sparkle back. I'm depressed as ever, but that's what else is new.
One of us constantly needs to be depressed to keep the equilibrium.
The binman must stay in the bin.
One of us must stay depressed. Is this like a proverb?
The binman must stay in the bin and one of us must always be depressed.
This is like a prophecy that like Professor Trelawney is making.
But stay busy, folks. Make sure you're subscribed, rating and reviewing, share with your friends. Keep up the... Oh my gosh. We have to... Our new friend and pal, Amelia J. Dowd.
Shout out to Amelia.
What a fucking stunner. I have been a fan of her work for so long. She is a stunning photographer and just a stunning gal. And she reached out and sent us a message and I was like, oh, doll, like I've been obsessed with you forever. So stunning that you're listening while you're editing. So hope the editing's going well, Amelia. We love your work. If you're ever in Brisbane, come take photos of me and Ellen. That'd be stunning.
Oh, man. Oh, yes. And our beloved friend Sarah Miller, our patron.
Oh, yeah.
Who was so sweet when she listened to our crappy episode and she was like, dolls, this is not it.
Yes, the last episode. Yes,
thank you for liking our Patreon episode. It's all for you, girl.
Yes.
Hope you enjoy.
You could join her and listen to the patron only content. You could do that.
I'm sure Sarah would recommend that you do.
Sarah?
Any thoughts? That's what I thought. Thanks, gal.
That's what I thought. Thanks, Joel. So thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with a bonus episode.
We'll be back with an episode.
Bonus episode. Oh, no, it's a real episode.
We haven't decided yet.
Right. But there is bonus content coming up for you because we love you. Please subscribe and tell your friends.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
'Disney vs. Disney Debates' podcast is all about finding the answer to one simple question. What is the best Disney movie of all time? Maybe the question isn't that simple. So join us every Saturday as hosts from all across That's Not Canon fight for their movies in one-on-one debates moderated by me, Zane C. Weber, in order to decide once and for all which of Disney's beloved classics or recent hits will take the crown.
Mine.
Save it for the show. Available now on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever you find podcasts.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.